It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Geese can be vicious birds as their populations grow. They come into contact with humans, and they react to strangers getting too close to their young about the same way that you and I would. Every summer, Madison culls its geese population, but that population lives mostly in parks where people gather, not in the woods, where hunters often find themselves alone chasing their prey. And even if logically we know there are too many geese, watching a culling or knowing it's happening can be pretty horrifying. We're exploring this summer's geese cull, and we want to hear what you think. Have you ever seen one? Do you think this is barbaric? Do you think this is just part of wildlife management? 800-642-1234, ideas@wpr.org is the email address, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Exploring this with us today is David Drake. David is a professor of forest and wildlife ecology at UW-Madison and a UW Extension wildlife specialist. David, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me on this morning.
So every summer, Madison euthanizes dozens of Canada geese. It's been doing that since 2011. This year, we did it on June 26th, correct?
I'm not exactly sure about the specific date, but that sounds in the right time of the year.
Okay, so how do these cullings, we're using this word cullings, usually work?
Well, the reason they typically do it in late May into June is Canada geese are what we call dump molters. So every bird species molts feathers, and that's how they, you know, at least once a year they molt their feathers so that they can grow new feathers. And so Canada geese molt all of their flight feathers at one time, which is unique or somewhat unique for bird species. So, for example, a cardinal or a blue jay, they'll drop or molt one flight feather as they're growing a new flight feather in, so they never lose the ability for full flight. With Canada geese, because they are what's called dump molters, or they molt all their flight feathers at one time, there's about a 30-day period there where they're completely flightless. And that coincides with a lot of the times when they're hatching out the young. And as the young are starting to hatch out, obviously for a brief period of time, the young are flightless as well until they are able to grow large enough and grow their own flight feathers. So the reason that these calls occur during that flightless period is wildlife professionals will come in with some kind of a board or some kind of a net area that they can actually steer the geese. And because the geese can't fly, they can just kind of round them up or push them so the geese are walking into a pen. And from there, they'll remove individual geese out of that pen, and then they'll put them into a carbon dioxide or a CO2 chamber. And that's how they euthanize the geese, through the CO2 chamber. And I should mention that all of this is typically done by trained professional wildlife biologists. And the choice of euthanasia is approved by the American Veterinary Medical Association. So it's considered, will be considered humane euthanasia. And I know people who do not agree with this, that they would perhaps consider that kind of a oxymoron,
right,
the humane euthanasia. But according to the American Veterinary Medical Association, that euthanasia method for Canada geese has been deemed humane and that the animals do not suffer as they get euthanized.
Okay, so I understand why you do this, but as you're describing this, and I know I'm
anthropomorphizing.
I've always had trouble with that word. I know that I'm doing this with the geese. I'm making them like human. But I as you are saying that you're putting them into pens and then you're gassing them, I'm thinking World War II. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
I'm thinking people going kind of like being going into pens, and you go this way to the right and you get to work, and you go this way and you go to the showers. So talk to me about why this is necessary and what happens if geese aren't culled.
Yeah, and let me maybe address your perception or that image you just painted as well. And that is, again, obviously, when you get into especially urban wildlife species, and it could be deer, turkey, Canada geese, it doesn't really matter what it is, it becomes very emotional very quickly because mm-hmm. there are people who are going to be on one end of the spectrum and say, you know what, I've run into too many deer with my car, deer are carrying ticks that have Lyme disease, for example. I know we're talking about Canada geese here. One of the issues with Canada geese, or a number of issues with Canada geese, is because there's an increased number of Canada geese or increased densities of resident Canada geese, and we should talk at some point here this morning about the difference between resident Canada geese and migratory Canada geese, but we're almost specifically talking about resident Canada geese. So these are geese that never leave that area year-round. So they
don't, interesting. Okay.
They don't typically take up that migratory route where the migratory geese are up in Canada right now nesting on the tundra, and then they'll come back down south during the wintertime. These are geese that stay in an urbanized landscape year-round. And because of all of the resources available in that urban landscape, so you have an abundance of food. Geese are herbivores. They graze on grass and other types of vegetation like that. So if you just think about all of the grass in an urbanized landscape, be it a soccer field, a golf course, a corporate campus that has just vast amounts of mown lawn, and then you think about all these water bodies. So, and a lot of times in these urbanized areas, even up north where we are here in Wisconsin, that some of these water bodies are open year-round. So if you have a pond or a water body in a corporate campus, for example, that corporate campus might have a fountain or a bubbler that keeps that water open year-round. So those are all great pieces of habitat that Canada geese need, and if that's available year-round, they have no incentive to expend energy and fly north during the summer to breed and then come back down south in the wintertime to overwinter. And so that's what we're talking about is an abundance or an overabundance of resident Canada geese.
So hang on a second here. We've created this?
We have, yeah. So when you think about Canada geese, Branta canadensis is the genus species for Canada goose. But there's 7 subspecies under Branta canadensis. And one of those subspecies is the giant Canada goose, and that's the primary subspecies that is the resident species in these urbanized areas. And so we have created this. Back in the 1930s, the federal government started releasing giant Canada geese because the native migratory goose populations became what they determined scarce due to overhunting and loss of habitat and things like that. And so the federal government started to restock or reintroduce Canada geese on the landscape. And the giant Canada goose, or one of those subspecies, was one of the subspecies they started to restock. And those geese, because they started out as a captive bred goose and then they were introduced into the wild, that they didn't take up the migratory route that the native migratory geese did. So that was one of the starts of the resident population. But then, as you know, if you're familiar with history, we had the post-World War II era, and along with that came Levittown and, you know, the international United
Suburbs.
States highway system,
right,
and suburbanization, urbanization, and all of that. So as we've come onto the landscape and developed the landscape to suit our human needs, that has also benefited a wide host of wildlife species, including Canada geese. So that's why they are typically in that urban landscape.
We are talking to David Drake, a UW-Madison wildlife specialist, about the culling of Canada geese that happens every summer in these parts. Does it happen in other parts of the state, too?
It does, yeah. It happens typically in most urbanized areas in the state. And I should say it happens not just in Wisconsin. It happens throughout the United States. So this is not a unique issue just to Wisconsin or to Madison.
So I have run into geese on golf courses. I have abandoned my ball at times because I do not want to deal with an angry goose.
Is it a good lie or a bad lie?
If I run into a geese, it's usually near a pond. So it's probably a bad lie.
Okay, but it's okay to abandon that ball.
But I don't run, I don't want to get bitten by a goose, and
yeah,
they can be pretty vicious. So I've dealt with this. I've run into this. I'm sure a lot of people listening have run into aggressive geese. Talk to me about the kinds of things that geese do when they're interacting with people.
Yeah, so the aggression comes into play most of the time this time of year or late spring, early summer when they are nesting. And obviously, just like any animal that is raising young or having nests, that they're territorial around that nest because they're trying to protect their young.
Right.
And so we may or may not know where the nest is. A lot of times, most times, humans are just walking by and are not aware that there's a nest right there, and all of a sudden they've got a goose charging at them. So there's an issue with aggression from the geese, and that's a natural display of behavior by a goose or any other animal just trying to protect its young.
I agree.
The issue becomes, as they start charging at you, if you are an older human being or somebody who can't move very well, Obviously, your reaction is initial fear, but also you're trying to get out of the way of the goose. And if you trip and fall, perhaps you can break a hip, or you might break an arm or something like that. So there are just numerous accounts where people have gotten injured from aggressive geese. So aggression is one issue.
We're going to be back to talk about the rest of the issues in a moment. We're talking about the annual culling of Canada geese that are resident geese, not migratory geese. I just learned this. Wildlife experts say that it is necessary, but it is hard to watch. We'll talk more about how it's done in a moment. It's The Morning Show. Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Geese are seemingly everywhere in the summer, but by fall, by late summer actually, they seem to be gone. No, they haven't flown south early. They've been culled or hunted to reduce their populations. It's a tough topic to talk about. We like geese. We don't like them attacking us. Have you had any chaotic run-ins with geese? What happened? Has that influenced your feelings about them? Do they make you avoid taking certain routes when you're walking about town? 800-642-1234 is the number to call us. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us. We love tweets. Please tweet us, WPR Mornings. David Drake is a professor of forest and wildlife ecology at UW-Madison, and he's helping us figure this whole culling geese thing out. So, David, when we took a break, you were talking about the ways that geese attack people, that people interact with geese. So we were talking about being older, maybe being on a golf course and running away and falling and breaking a bone. What are some other issues?
Yeah, so some of the other issues, obviously, geese are grazers, as we talked about, in grass, and so they eat a lot of grass, and what it comes in has to go out. So there's a lot of defecation or goose poop left, and that's left on sidewalks. It's left in parking lots. It's left on golf courses. You know, a lot of people are concerned if their kids are playing youth sports, you know, lacrosse, soccer, baseball, and they fall down or they slide, and they slide through goose poop. There's some concerns about health risk there. And there's also the aesthetics of just seeing all the goose poop around, or maybe you've experienced this if you go to try to putt across the green and you've got that beautiful line and all of a sudden there's a piece of goose poop in the way. So that's an issue. There is also the issue of overgrazing, so that because they do eat so much, that they can overgraze an area. And so if you're trying to be a horticulturalist, for example, or you're trying to grow grass, that can be a concern. Some of those issues are relatively minor and perhaps trivial, depending on who you are and the way you look at things. What becomes a serious issue, however, is as you get geese around airports, for example. And so if you remember the plane that crashed in the Hudson River,
yes,
they made the movie Miracle in the Hudson,
indeed,
or whatever that was called. The reason that plane went down is because they ingested a Canada goose through one of the engines, and it shut the engine down. And there's some other issues. There was an Air Force base in Alaska a number of years ago where a military plane had taken off, and they had flown through a flock of Canada geese, and that plane crashed, and all 24 people on board died. So there are some really serious issues as well, and that was one of the impetuses for the call in Warner Park here on the east side of Madison, because Warner Park is in the flight path of the Dane County Airport, that they called geese for in the interest of public safety and aircraft safety. So those are some of the issues, and most of the time, as a society, we tend to focus on those issues that directly affect us as human beings, but there are also a lot of issues where Canada geese are affecting other natural resources that we don't really talk about or we don't focus on too much. But
like what?
An example might be if Canada geese are grazing the side of a stream bank, and as they graze that vegetation down, that will increase erosion on that stream bank, and as the soil starts eroding or coming into the stream, obviously then that's reducing the amount of dissolved oxygen available for fish or other animals that are living in that water column, or it increases the siltation in that water column. And so instead of having nice clean water, now you've got dirty water, And as that occurs, instead of having a good deep channel, that channel starts to fill in a little bit. So there's some natural resource issues as well that we don't typically talk about, but are as serious or can be as serious as some of these human-focused issues that we typically tend to concentrate on.
So Canada geese are, I believe, protected by, under federal law, correct?
They are. So, again, we're talking about resident Canada geese. Those are the animals that are being culled, and those are the animals that are of most interest to most people in that urban area. Mm-hmm. And so even though they're resident, they don't ever migrate out of the area. They still are considered a migratory bird because if they wanted to get up off their lazy butt and migrate, they certainly are physically able to do that. So they are protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act primarily.
Okay, and yet we still are able to kill them. And do we, Madison or Dane County, are we the ones that are responsible for doing this, or is this a federal thing? Who does it?
Yeah. So it varies. And I should say, culling has been going on since 1999. And so, and let me also maybe just return quickly to a comment you made, or the way you painted that picture earlier on. That about, you know, it kind of evokes images of the gas chamber from World War II and things like that. And I understand that. I that's a common refrain, mm-hmm. Especially amongst people who are against this type of an issue. I tend to shudder when people refer to things like that, because that issue in World War II is just such a horrific issue.
Right.
And I mean, obviously, we're talking about human beings versus Canada geese, and you know, we can get into the whole issue about the value of an individual species or an individual or whatever the case might be. So, and this is where it really comes down, I think, to an animal rights issue versus a population issue. So, as a wildlife biologist, we look at animals as a population. We don't typically look at animals as individuals. From an animal rights standpoint or an animal welfare standpoint, typically the animal is looked at as an individual. And so there's great empathy for that individual that is getting killed or culled. But if you look at it from a population standpoint, there's roughly 3.5 million resident Canada geese in the United States. So even with the culling that's going on, there's no – and I should say the culling is done sustainably and it's done responsibly, legally, and ethically. And there's no interest in any way to cull so many Canada geese, or resident Canada geese specifically, that we're gonna cause extinction of the Canada goose species. All we're trying to do, or all that's being trying to be done with these culling exercises, is to actually reduce the overall population in that local area so that you can reduce some of those negative consequences or negative impacts, be it aggression or goose poop or, you know, flight risk to airplanes or whatever the case might be. So nobody is interested in eliminating all the resident Canada geese on the landscape. That's never the goal. The goal is simply to try to get that population back in check or back in balance with the environment.
So okay, go ahead.
Sorry, go on.
So, and what I want to know, and actually somebody called in to start to ask a question about this too, what happens to the geese after they're culled? Do we get to eat their meat? Are they used as feed for other animals? There's a food chain question here.
Yeah, and that's a really good question. Most culling exercises, and again, it doesn't matter if it's deer, turkey, geese, whatever the case might be, most of the time there is an attempt to use that resource or use that meat. So most of the time they try to find food pantries or something like that, because a geese or deer or whatever you want to think about that are getting culled to reduce that overall population, that's a really good source of organic, free-range protein. And so people who are doing the culling as trained wildlife biologists, that they're not interested in wasting the resource. And so mm-hmm. they'd like to try to get that resource into the food system somehow. And typically it's processed and then a lot of times given to a food bank.
And that doesn't, the way that they're killed does not you contaminate them at all, right?
Yeah, I don't believe that. I believe CO2, that it can go into the food chain. There are other ways perhaps that sometimes you don't put it into the food chain, but CO2, I believe, is okay, and I'm pretty certain that is not an issue that is going to affect human beings. But I will say this, that if that goose that's been culled does go into the food chain, there is absolutely no way that if you consume that goose, that you're going to get ill as a human being, or it's going to cause you any sickness or death or anything like that. There's never an animal that would be put into the human food chain that would not be USDA approved and safe for a human being to eat.
We are talking about Canada geese, resident Canada geese that we cull every summer. We are taking your calls about what you think of this culling, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Do you think that this is a good idea? Are you against this? Do you feel like I like your analogy there, David Drake, that wildlife biologists look at the whole herd, and some people tend to look at individual animals, and there is a difference. And we shouldn't probably anthropomorphize animals. Our technical director here, Michael Derringer, said, why don't they just put the geese somewhere in some sort of park and let people hunt them? That might be, you know, they can kind of like, you know, have hunters have their day, and then the hunters can take whatever they shoot, and it kind of gives the geese maybe a chance to get away.
Yeah, so the issue is, again, we're talking about resident Canada geese and not migratory Canada geese. So there is a defined waterfowl hunting season, and Canada geese are a popular species for waterfowl hunters, and there are plenty of Canada geese that do get harvested during the regular defined hunting season or harvested season. Primarily, those geese are migratory, not resident. Again, most of the resident geese are hanging out in that urbanized landscape in cities or, you know, suburban areas. And most of the places where they are residing, it is illegal to discharge a firearm. And so it's difficult. And so you could capture the resident Canada geese and bring them out into the country or someplace where they, you know, could be hunted. But the amount of expense and effort involved to do that would not make it worth it. And so, and I should say, you asked a few minutes ago, you know, who does this? And so when the first call started, and Canada geese, resident Canada geese, have been called since 1999, so it's been going on for almost 20 years. So this is not a problem that just all of a sudden showed up, and has been dealt with in a, you know, recent spate. This is something that's been a long-standing issue. When the problem first started, you know, almost 20 years ago, typically it was municipalities that would apply for what's called a depredation order. And because these are migratory animals or viewed as migratory animals, the federal government, and primarily the United States Fish and Wildlife Service, has the statutory authority to manage migratory species. So they have the statutory authority to manage Canada geese. So people, or typically a municipality, would apply to the United States Fish and Wildlife Service for a depredation order. Sometimes you would also have to get a state permit, and sometimes you'd have to get a local permit, depending on the permitting in each political jurisdiction. So typically then a municipality would apply, and then they would be allowed to take lethal action. And on that depredation permit, it would say you are allowed to call or kill up to so many geese. And then after the calling season would be done, then that municipality would be responsible for reporting the total number of geese that they've called. And they could call up to the number on that permit, but no more. But because this is such a prolific issue, and it's an issue really across the United States, that there is now what's called a general depredation order. And so you don't have to apply as a municipality. An individual could apply, and you can just go online. If you just Google general depredation order, you can go online and fill out a depredation permit, and then you would be allowed to go and oil eggs, for example, which is another management technique.
Oil eggs?
We'll talk about that in just a second. Because the actual calling itself typically is done by the United States Department of Agriculture, and then there's a subset of that called Wildlife Services. And Wildlife Services is a subset of the USDA. Is all trained professional wildlife biologists, and they are tasked with managing wildlife damage primarily on public lands, but they can be invited onto private lands as well. And so most of the calling that occurs in Wisconsin is done by the USDA Wildlife Services, which has three different offices here in the state of Wisconsin. If you move out east, some of the calling operations are undertaken now by private contractors as well, but nothing is done. If you are physically touching a goose or a goose egg or a gosling, the young geese, if you're making physical contact or you're going to kill the gosling, typically goslings aren't killed, but if you kill the goose, you absolutely have to have a federal permit and sometimes a state and local permit to do that. And if you do not have those permits, you're doing it illegally, and then you should suffer the consequences of breaking the law.
Okay, so there are two things. First of all, you use the word gosling, and I realize that there are children's books that are written about geese. So that's partly why I think this is such a controversial thing. We have an attachment to geese as kind of fairy tale characters. But I want to go back to this oiling eggs thing. So you're putting stuff on eggs that doesn't make them hatch?
Yeah, so we are obviously focusing today, and in the news we've focused a lot on the culling. But there's also a integrated program going on where the culling is really, a lot of times, it's the last tool in the toolbox that is used. So most of the time what's done, and this is in consultation with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources or with USDA Wildlife Services biologists or people at the Extension Service or others, but most of the time what happens is if a community or a homeowners association or an individual human being is having an issue with canada geese, they might call somebody up and they would be recommended that if you live on a lake, for example, maybe try and put up some kind of a barrier between the water and the land so that the geese stay in the water and they don't come up onto the land or into your lawn to poop and graze as frequently as they are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of a non-lethal management technique. Another example of a non-lethal management technique that is used very, very commonly is harassment or scaring the animals. So if you've got Canada geese on a pond, somebody might go out there with a remote-controlled boat and chase the geese around with a boat. So that's scaring the geese off the water. Or there's noisemakers that are used, so pyrotechnics, for example, things like that. So there's a wide variety of harassment devices that are very commonly used.
But that just moves the geese
out of an area.
That just moves the geese from your area to somebody else's area.
The issue with non-lethal management is you're never actually solving the problem. You're just moving that problem someplace else. But a lot of people employ and are encouraged to employ non-lethal management to see if you can't, if people do it community-wide, then you're able to move those geese out into a less urban area where there's not as much conflict with human beings, and perhaps we can find some kind of a better balance between Canada geese and human beings. So we try harassment, we try exclusion, where we're trying to actually fence or prevent animals from coming up out of the water into the grass. There's a whole bunch of different habitat management practices. So, for example, one of the things geese don't like is they don't like tall grass where they can't see above the grass because they don't know if there's a predator there that might eat them. But the other thing is with Canada geese, they're such a large-bodied, heavy-bodied animal.
Yes.
If you've ever watched them take off, they don't just take off like a chickadee does right off the branch. They've got to start running across the land or running across the water to get enough airflow over their wings so they can actually get flight. And so that tall grass prevents them from having enough, you know, takeoff room where they can get going. So a lot of places in airports, for example, or in city parks, especially around water bodies, that they'll let that grass grow up. And as you start letting that grass grow up and it's taller than the goose itself, then geese tend to shy away from those types of areas. So there's a lot of habitat management, harassment, exclusion, a lot of non-lethal management that takes place prior to actually getting to the call. And the call, as I mentioned, it's one of the tools in a toolbox, but it's usually the last resort in that toolbox.
We are talking about Canada geese and the culling of Canada geese this hour. In a moment, we're going to ask if Canada geese have any natural predators and how much they are, how much we are invading their space, not necessarily the other way around. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking about the annual geese cull today. And by cull, we mean kill. It's a population control effort, just like deer season. But it's done in our parks, and it's not something a lot of people like to see. Do you think this is a good idea, or are you against this and other forms of hunting, perhaps? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org, and you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Wildlife specialist David Drake is talking us through this. And David, before the break, we were talking about oiling eggs and other non-lethal ways of making these geese go away. You want to finish up on that?
Yeah, so one of the other management techniques is to oil eggs. So Canada geese typically breed for life, and when they do, they will obviously nest, and a lot of times they nest, if not in the more or less exact same place, in the pretty specific location year after year. So one of the common management practices also try to reduce the recruitment or the increase of Canada geese on the landscape is to go and actually somehow to kill the embryo inside that egg. And so what typically would happen is a Canada goose nests and they lay their eggs. If you were to go out there once the last egg is laid in the nest and stomp on all the eggs, for example, to kill them, all that would incent the pair to do is to rebreed, and they'd go and lay another nest of eggs someplace else.
Okay.
So typically what is done is to kill the embryo inside the egg, but to leave the actual egg, the shell itself, intact. And so there's a number of ways to do that, but one of the more common ways is to oil eggs. And so, and this is something that an individual homeowner or a homeowner association can do. They can go online, sign up on the depredation permit to do this, and then they're allowed to go out with just general corn oil, for example, out of your kitchen pantry. And what essentially you would do is you'd take each egg out of the nest and you would coat that egg in corn oil and then put the oil-coated egg back in the nest. And essentially what that does is there's small pores within that eggshell, and those pores allow for air exchange between the outside of the egg and the inside of the egg and moisture exchange. But by coating the egg with oil, you are essentially clogging all those pores. So essentially you're killing the embryo within that egg, but it leaves the eggshell intact, which then fools the mom into thinking, hey, my eggs are still good, I'll just remain on this nest.
Mm.
And then eventually she realizes nothing's hatching out, but by that time they're so late into the nesting season they don't re-nest.
Interesting.
So that's a very common tactic, and it is, again, a valuable tool in that larger toolbox of management practices. But what happens is, so even if you were to oil every single nest, you still have all the existing Canada geese on that landscape, still creating that impact that it was the initial reason for the call or the initial reason for people wanting to employ some kind of a management action. And then the other interesting thing to me, at least, with culling the eggs, is most animal rights groups or animal welfare groups do not see that as a lethal management practice, even though you are killing the embryo inside that egg. And so things like the United States Animal Humane Society, for example, they support culling of eggs, even though that they are typically against killing animals, and that is a lethal management practice. They still do support it. So that's kind of a nice compromise, I think, where people who are in favor of culling and people who are not in favor of culling can actually get together and kind of collaboratively support a management practice.
We are talking about culling the geese herd, the resident geese herd here in Wisconsin. David Drake is taking us through this. We had a caller who asked if geese had any natural predators.
They typically do, but not when they get to be an adult-sized goose. Not too many natural predators, because obviously, those goose.
I guess we are the natural predators.
We are. Yep, we are the natural predator. But think about how large a Canada goose is, and as we've already alluded to this, if a Canada goose is kind of chasing at you, that's a pretty formidable foe coming at you. And think about that from if it's kind of scaring us as human beings. Think about a natural wildlife predator. So most of the predation occurs on Canada geese when the Canada goose is in the egg or when they're young. And so when the Canada goose eggs are in the nest, things like raccoons and skunks and coyote and fox and the occasional snake and things like that will come and kill the eggs. When they're goslings, sometimes hawks, owls, coyotes, things like that. When they're on the water, depending on the size of the gosling, predatory fish like muskie or pike might take them. Snapping turtles might take them occasionally, things like that. But once they get to be a large adult-sized Canada goose, there's not much natural predation.
I'm going to say this again, though. I mean, Michael talked about, asked me the question about gathering up the geese and taking them and hunting them. But what about just gathering up the geese and taking them somewhere that's not urban?
Well, the problem is there's no guarantee that those animals aren't going to fly back to where they came from, you know, no matter how far you release them. And if you release them, you know, let's say you take them out of Mass and we take them over to, you know, I don't know, halfway to Milwaukee, for example, they're likely to seek out another urbanized type area or another area where human beings are, because that's what they're familiar with and comfortable with. And so essentially all you're doing is relocating that problem from your community to another community. And a lot of times where you're relocating that problem, that community also has their own issue with Canada geese. And so essentially you're exacerbating another community's problem.
So so are there other ways that we can, like, deal with habitat issues to cull the geese rather than kill them all? Can we change their habitats?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you think about some of these large corporate campuses, for example, with just these vast expanses of turf, you know, that would be an awesome opportunity to maybe put native prairie in, for example. And if you put native prairie in, you're not going to have as many, if any, Canada geese there. You're benefiting the pollinator community. You're benefiting native grassland birds. You're reducing the amount of cost to purchase lawnmowers. You're reducing the amount of fossil fuels that are being burned to run that lawnmower. You're reducing the amount of labor cost to mow the lawn and things like that. So that is something that is stressed, especially to areas where you have large, vast expanses of grass, be it parks, corporate campuses, whatever, churches, schools, whatever the case might be. Now, that's not a universally applied management practice, because there are places, for example, you know, if you're talking about a golf course, there's certainly parts of that course you can't allow tall grass to grow. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to play golf.
Right.
So there are limitations, obviously, but there is a lot more that can be done in terms of modifying the habitat to try to reduce the amount of use by geese, for sure.
We are talking about resident Canada geese and the annual culling that happens in Madison and other parts of the state, other parts of the Midwest. David Drake is taking us through this today. He's a UW-Madison wildlife specialist. We are also taking your calls. Have you ever seen a geese culling? What do you think about this? This is seems to be a matter-of-fact thing. We have too many geese. Geese get in our way. Geese get into the engines of airplanes when we take off. And by the way, I'm pretty sure that the airplane that landed in the Hudson, geese got into both engines.
That may have been.
Yeah, they lost everything. So
yeah, I'm sure if you're on that airplane at that time, you don't really care how many engines are out.
Exactly. I mean, the plane was incapacitated. They had to land in a river, and they managed to do it.
I think you opened the show with talking about some people see culling as horrific. You know, other people would see a plane landing in the Hudson as a horrific event as well.
Right.
As a result of Canada geese. So I guess it's all relative and what your perspective is.
That is true. So we're really talking about how we can coexist with animals around us. And the question about, actually, let me give the phone number for a second, 800-642-1234. So the question about how we coexist with animals is a bigger question. And are there things that we have done and are continuing to do that we could probably change in terms of how we set up our urban environments?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, one of the things, when we go and build a city, for example, you know, how wildlife is going to fit into that city is not at the foremost point of our brain or our mind as we're, you know, building that city. We're thinking about how many houses can we zone for this residential community, for example, or we're thinking about, you know, how do we get people from their house to their place of work or from their house to school or a grocery store as fast as we possibly can. And so, you know, the priority is the human being as we are trying to set up those communities or the cities or towns or whatever the case might be. And then we realize, kind of after the fact, we tend to retrofit our cities with green space or retrofit our cities with parks, and then thinking about wildlife as an afterthought. And if there's certainly, you know, with cities that are already existing, there is little you can do to kind of, I mean, all you are doing is retrofitting, unless you're going to just raise the city and start from scratch, which just is not ever going to happen. So so the next best thing is to try to figure out, well, how can we live with the wildlife species in the city? And it doesn't matter. It could be Canada geese. We've talked about turkey. We've talked about deer. But, you know, there's coyote, red fox. If you go out to Los Angeles, there's mountain lions living in the city of Los Angeles. You go to Phoenix, there's bobcats in the city of Phoenix, as well as rattlesnakes. And, you know, so all these wildlife species, they're not leaving the city ever. We're not leaving the city ever. So one of the best things we can do is to educate ourselves to figure out how to best live with these animals. And some of it is going to require a culling exercise where species get overabundant. But there is a lot of stuff we can do where we can actually create and enhance and manage habitat for urban species or species that are living in these urbanized landscapes so that they have better habitat and they can kind of, we can kind of have a buffer almost between us and them to some extent. So that's one thing is to create and enhance and manage habitat for urban species. The other issue is to educate ourselves so we understand why these animals are here, whether the animal is posing a risk to us health-wise or safety-wise or not. If it's not, then you'd react in one way. If it is, then you'd react in a separate way. So understanding why that animal's there and the behavior of that animal. But then I think also is to increase our general tolerance of these animals that are living in this landscape with us or trying to share that same landscape with us. And so, you know, there's a lot of stuff we can do on the human side to try to avoid getting to that actual call of some of these species. And some of that is all, how we develop the landscape. Some of it is how we view and tolerate these animals as well.
We are talking, we have been talking about the annual culling of Canadian geese. We've been talking with David Drake. He's a professor of forest and wildlife ecology at UW-Madison and UW-Madison, UW Extension Wildlife Specialist. I just want to make one more note. There are a couple people who've called in saying, I'm sick of goose turds on the bike path. But if people are hungry and these geese will go to feed people, then I'm all for it. Thank you, David, for being with us.
Oh, thanks for shedding some light on this issue. I appreciate it.
It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman.